This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. We're thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Miriam Caret. Dr. Caret is the Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at Intuitive. Miriam's been with Intuitive for some time. Thank you, Miriam, for taking the time to join us today. Can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, Scott, for having me. So I am a surgeon by training, went to medical school on the East Coast, did my general surgery training in Chicago. I then went to work for the Indian Health Service for a few years to help pay back medical school loans. And it was during that time that laparoscopic surgery came out, so I hadn't been trained in it. So I went back to do a fellowship in laparoscopic surgery. And then moved to Stanford, where I was a faculty member there in minimally invasive surgery. And that's when robotic surgery came out, so I learned how to do it and started to do that in laparoscopic surgery for my patients, did some research, and that was my initial interaction with Intuitive. I became a proctor for them and a teacher for them, and ultimately they invited me to join them as their chief medical advisor and then finally their chief medical officer.
And talk about Intuitive is sort of the original great company with the Da Vinci robot. It's really the leader in the world today in digital assisted surgery. How did you end up as chief medical officer, and what does that role entail today at Intuitive? What does the chief medical officer do?
Well, what I found is that chief medical officers at different medical device companies have different responsibilities, but some of the core things that we all do and that I do is I do run our clinical development engineers, so the people who are helping to test new products and helping to develop new procedures. Also our human factors engineering, who look at the usability of products. I run our clinical affairs group. They're the ones who do clinical studies, both for publication purposes and regulatory purposes. Our health economics and outcomes research, who are looking at the economic analysis of using robotic-assisted surgery. Our regulatory group, as well as our global public affairs group.
You have a faculty position at Stanford. You've served as a clinical professor since 2015. You also work, have a part-time clinical appointment at the Veterans Administration Medical Center. Talk about how you balance your life and how you do all these different things.
Yes, so I'm very fortunate to still be able to be a clinical surgeon and still be able to practice surgery. That was an important part for me of my transition to industry, and I've been very fortunate to work with a group of colleagues who have enabled me to be able to do that. As you can imagine, it's very different using any surgical device in surgery versus in a lab where you're testing it. And so as it helps my work at Intuitive, to see how our products are used firsthand in the OR and where there are opportunities for improvement. I don't operate as much as I would like to, but it is important to me that I continue to teach residents and fellows as well as taking care of patients, and so I still do that at the VA. I do both robotic and laparoscopic surgery. I love teaching, and so that was important to me to be able to continue doing that, and I really feel that taking care of patients is important. So I'm really lucky I've been able to combine both the work for industry as well as the clinical and education work.
If you don't mind, you had mentioned earlier that out of medical school or early on in your career, you spent some time at the Indian Health Services. You also went to Harvard Medical School. Do you mind taking just a moment to talk about the experience working with Indian Health Services?
Yeah, that was a terrific experience. I really had the opportunity to learn a great deal and hopefully to give back. I was working in Gallup, New Mexico, and I was one of several surgeons. We did have anesthesiologists, general surgeons, orthopedic surgeons. You know, we were able to provide a full scope of medical care to the Navajo Nation and the patients there. I did my residency in an inner city hospital in the University of Chicago, so it was very interesting to see what the socioeconomic problems in the community were and how different they were in the Indian Health Service than they were in an inner city hospital, but that there were still socioeconomic problems that really affected how we could help treat our patients. So it was a terrific group of people to work with, a terrific group of patients to work with, and I really was really proud of the ability to give back in such a meaningful way.
I mean, it's really a remarkable career between Intuitive, Stanford, Harvard, University of Chicago, working with Indian Health Services, working with the VA. I mean, you've really worked and been part of the most elite institutions in the world, and also given back to some of the most important places, whether the inner city, the VA, Indian Health Services. I mean, you must be quite proud of the balance of your career that you've pursued. And I want to ask you to comment on that, but you've got to be proud of the way that you've handled your professional life. It's really magnificent.
I'm very proud of how much I've been able to give back, and I'm very grateful to the people who've given me that opportunity to do that and still be really fulfilled and really challenged. But I think being able to make a difference is important for people, and I've been very fortunate to have that opportunity.
How do you look at training today? How does Intuitive and you define training? Is it mostly learning how to use the robots, or is it teaching procedures? What's the mix of training?
You know, our feeling is that we are responsible for teaching a surgeon and OR staff how to use the system. We're in the best position to do that. We understand the full capability of the system, as well as understanding exactly how to use it safely. So we think that should always be our responsibility, and we'll always have that responsibility. I think there's also the next step is, once somebody knows how to use the devices, how do they use it in their surgical practice? Now, these are surgeons who already know how to do a given procedure, either open or laparoscopically, but now they have a new surgical device and they want to be able to use it in their practice. And I think that's where other surgeons step in, right? That's about teaching surgery and how to use different tools in surgery. And I don't think industry should be involved in that. But there's a period of time between when a company puts a new device on the market and that device is accepted enough by the community of surgeons that they are then willing to take on that responsibility of teaching other surgeons. So what we try to do is enable that until a society can take on that responsibility. So we have many courses that are run by surgeons, seminars that are run by surgeons. We enable proctoring, so an expert surgeon will go to a novice surgeon's hospital and help them with the case. So we've invested a lot, not just in teaching a surgeon how to use the equipment, but also enabling that peer-to-peer teaching, which we think is absolutely critical to the safe and effective use of the devices.
And it's actually a fascinating perspective, is when a procedure starts to gain traction, there's still this period of time when there's only a handful of surgeons really know how to use the device for that procedure, and it's really trying to bridge that gap for several years as well, until something becomes so highly used that it's being taught all over the place. And it's really a fascinating perspective on the mentoring and the proctoring and so forth, and how you work with surgeons in the community to make sure people are learning how to use this well.
Yep, you're right. I think people don't quite understand how something like that works. I saw it through laparoscopy, and now I'm seeing it through robotic-assisted surgery. So how do we bridge that gap? Like, for example, you take urology and prostatectomy, which is one of the first procedures that were done with the robot. Now, residents are trained in residency programs by their faculty on how to use the robot in these procedures. So we don't train very many urologists, if any at all. But until it gets to that point, we want to make sure that we're able to facilitate that as much as possible.
And take a moment and talk to us about some of the changes you've seen in the last decade to two in how surgery is taught.
I think there's a number of things that have changed. I don't know if you've heard the old phrase about surgical education, which was see one, do one, teach one. So you would see a case as a medical student, you would do a case as a resident, and then you would be teaching one the next week as a faculty member. And I think what we've learned is, you know, that's not enough. And that what we need to be doing is giving people opportunities to get past their learning curve outside of the OR. So using things like simulators, like virtual reality, augmented reality environments, so that any of the learning that they have to do, they're doing before they get into the operating room. And then making sure that there's enough supervision, proctoring, help from more experienced surgeons while they're getting past their learning curve in the operating room. And so I think I've seen this not just obviously at Intuitive, but also within the surgical education environment, and that people are becoming a lot more creative about how to teach people outside of the OR, how to use new technology, AI or ML, things like that, to help train and teach surgeons in their residency program. And then also a lot of interest if, you know, surgeons are out in practice, something new comes in, how do we teach them? Or they have a medical problem and they're out of surgery for a while. How do we reintegrate them and have them relearn their skills quickly? So I think the breadth of the problem has gotten much bigger, but we've gotten more creative about trying to resolve those problems technologically.
Thank you. And where do you see some of the biggest gaps or opportunities for teaching, for training, for digital surgery, for more? Where are some of the biggest gaps in our system?
I think the biggest gap is that how do you actually know whether somebody's competent to do that procedure objectively? So right now in residency program, let's say general surgery, they spend 5 years, their faculty are evaluating them, the faculty put together, the resident puts together how many cases he or she did, and he or she has to do a minimum number of cases, and the program director signs off. But there's actually no objective data about that person's performance in the OR. And so if we could capture that, if we could capture metrics, and then we could teach to those metrics and give that feedback on those metrics back, we could make sure that people got past their learning curve and to some level of competency or proficiency in an objective measure as quickly as possible and then stay there consistently. And I don't think that's just an issue with robotic surgery. I think that's an issue with any approach to surgery. But I do think that with the data that is captured by robotic-assisted surgical devices, that could be a very powerful tool to help fill that gap.
And this issue of assessing competency is so prevalent in surgery, and so prevalent in so many things, is really assessing, is someone really ready to do it themselves? Are they good enough? Can you trust the results? Are you excited about the results and so forth? And I think a great point in that big gap and sort of really understanding those variances is so important.
I completely agree with you. Not just in surgery. You're absolutely right.
And Dr. Carrot, Intuitive has now been around for 25 plus years, 7 million procedures on the Da Vinci systems, really the pioneer in robotic-assisted surgery. How do you approach evidence generation or analysis of outcomes overall? How do you look at some of these issues that follow from your last discussion? You know, is there a big interest in clinical trials? How do you look at outcomes? A couple thoughts there.
Yeah, you know, that is a big question, and it's something that I think the community at large, you know, patient communities, surgical communities, and industry communities are all very interested in. Typically, people have looked at randomized controlled trials, and in particular in the pharma industry, that is the norm. It's actually difficult to do randomized controlled trials in surgery because of the issue of equipoise. You need a surgeon who is equally good at both techniques to really be able to randomize patients to different techniques, and that's extremely hard to find. Plus, as the technology evolves, by the time the first clinical trial is done, you now have a whole new system that you now need to get equipoise for the surgeons on and then redo. So I think in surgery, the value of real-world evidence has become quite apparent in the last few years. And so these can be cohort studies. They can be best-in-class studies where you take a surgeon who's really good with one approach and another surgeon who's really good with a different approach and then compare their results. You know, it's not at the level of a randomized controlled trial, but I think that we need to get real-world evidence which helps surgeons make decisions about their patient, not just the kind of patient who would be in the study, but their patient who may not meet the inclusion and exclusion criteria. There are over 21,000 publications on the Da Vinci system in peer-reviewed journals. And I think that level of evidence, that amount of evidence, is something that can be used to help answer questions people have and show them the value that robotic-assisted surgery can bring.
Thank you very much, Dr. Corrett. You've had really this remarkable career. It's really amazing the breadth of your career between being a great, great surgeon, a great teacher at Stanford, the chief medical officer at Intuitive, someone who's worked with Indian Health Services, someone who's worked in the inner city, Harvard Medical Graduate School. I mean, it's really a resume that I'm proud of, and I don't even know you very well, but your parents must be thrilled with your career. It's really, really magnificent, in all seriousness, just magnificent. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
It is a great pleasure. Just a final note, this podcast is brought to you by Becker's Healthcare in conjunction with Intuitive. Intuitive is a global technology leader and pioneer of robotic-assisted surgery. If you have any feedback in this program or requests for future podcast topics, please email me at sbecker@beckershealthcare.com. Thank you and have a great day. Miriam, I want to thank you again. Just a remarkable guest. It really is fascinating, your career and fascinating your thoughts here as Chief Medical Officer of Intuitive. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Have a good rest of the day.